This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I am John Batzler, Gaius, and Michael Vlahos, Germanicus. We are reflecting, philosophizing about the present situation 2,000 years from where we are here in the first century AD. We still have in our minds that the Roman Empire is solidly established by might, the might of Rome. And the model we all have is how our worshipped ancestor Caesar dealt with the Gauls and the Gaulish tribes that troubled him before he turned his attention to the Roman tribes who troubled him. Now, at the end of the first century AD, our emperor Domitian, who's always in trouble with the Senate, is campaigning against the barbarians. However, we know the end of that will not be happy for Domitian, will be happy for the Roman Empire for the second century and into the third century AD. Eventually there'll be troubles, but not now. We're looking for the trouble in the 21st century. And Germanicus, I put you in the Kremlin, always wise to put yourself in the position of your adversary, and see as the Kremlin sees right now. Emperor Biden and the alliance do not in any fashion speak of building siege machines and challenging our might in the Black Sea Basin, ours, the Kremlin's might. So at the same time, we, the Kremlin, are making moves in Central Asia, in Kazakhstan, in the Baltics with our colleagues, the Chinese, threatening Lithuania, and certainly along the frontier with Poland. We're always troubling Poland out of Belarus. We see the United States as hapless. Mr. Biden is emphasizing to his own people that he will not station troops or commit large formations to the defense of NATO. He's talking about sanctions as if barbarians worry themselves about sanctions that they know easily can be evaded with the help of our friends, such as the Chinese or the Iranians or the Turks. So if Biden won't build siege machines, what have we to fear? Why not go farther and farther and see when we meet steel, Germanicus?
That's exactly the situation that I think the Kremlin has analyzed, and a situation that is strongly in its own favor right now. So that there is not only no reason to try and meet halfway in some sort of minor compromise with NATO. But this, I think, at least to Mr. Putin, is an opportunity to try and get a more lasting resolution to the situation in Ukraine, in large part for some of the factors that we've mentioned. The U.S. Emperor, the current U.S. emperor, is weak and getting weaker. The United States is divided as a society. The military is in a steep decline in terms of morale. And moreover, its attention is absolutely divided between Russia and China, and possibly for the next several months, unless there is some sort of nuclear agreement, with Iran as well. And so combine that with Europe's aversion to any sort of military risk, adding as well Europe's need for Russian natural gas during the winter, and a German desire to kind of give in as much as possible as to create some sense of stability or some kind of backing away from crisis, which tends to be the prime directive of all European foreign policy and diplomacy these days. All of these elements add up to a situation that should brook no compromise, a major compromise on the part of Russia. And we can see this through the so-called treaty or two treaties, actually, that Mr. Putin has proposed, in the sense that Russia has loudly proclaimed that they will not accept anything less than the full terms of these agreements. That tends to indicate to me that Russia, the Kremlin, that is, well understands that the U.S. and NATO hold a weak hand. And then add to all of these elements in play is the final issue of an American regime, an emperor, who is essentially now hoist to his own petard. The United States has gone on a limb condemning Russia, and the party of the president has spent the last 4 years making Russia a new boogeyman in language not seen since the Cold War, full of threats, bluster, and all sorts of verbal, rhetorical abomination. And there is, in effect, no way for this administration to make a big concession without looking weak. And yet it desperately wants to reach an agreement and to find an accommodation. And so I fail to see what the risk is in Russia pushing this situation now, because it may not be in a situation of comparable strength in the future. A red administration, for example, years down the road, would represent quite a different proposition for Mr. Putin. And Russia is now in a position as well, certainly as the Kremlin sees it, of being fairly fairly much buffered, not wholly immune, but at least in a position where it feels its economy can ride out whatever sanctions are placed by the U.S. on it.
We are on the eve of the conversation, the diplomatic conversation, between representatives of the U.S. and NATO and representatives of Russia. There are no siege machines mentioned. We do have this report, Germanicus, and it will be continued. This is NBC within these last hours. The Biden administration is heading into next week's talks with Russia, still unsure whether Moscow is serious about negotiations. But if so, U.S. officials are ready to propose discussions on scaling back U.S. and Russian troop deployments and military exercises in Eastern Europe. A current administration official and two former U.S. national security officials familiar with the planning told NBC News. The discussions could potentially address the scope of military drills held by both powers, the number of U.S. troops stationed in the Baltic states and Poland, advance notice about the movement of forces, and Russia's nuclear-capable Iskander missiles deployed in the Russian territory of Kaliningrad between Poland and Lithuania, the sources said. Germanicus, is there any way to read those two passages without thinking of surrender?
The problem is that there is no escape from an agreement that seriously retreats from the stern, a solemn rhetorical bombast of American threats. And it will be extremely hard for NATO to get behind the U.S. In terms of a severe sanctions regime, including cutting Nord Stream 2. If the U.S. Advances its fierce face against Russia, after having looked weak. So a country that looks weak cannot take a strong stand. We saw this back in the 1930s on the part of Mr. Chamberlain.
We will not build siege machines. We won't do it. We say we're not going to do it.
Right, and there's no reason to get angry or fulminate at the United States for not having been ready to go to war, because that is even more foolish. The problem is that we didn't assess what the limits of our policy would be. We didn't seriously understand what the strengths of Russia are, and we're constantly, as you know, bad-mouthing Russia as being a weak state in terminal decline. And now what we're seeing is a rather effective strong-arm diplomacy by a power that isn't at our level, but that is nonetheless besting us.
The barbarians are across the Danube, and there's nothing holding them back but history. Michael Vlahos is Germanicus. I am Gaius. We have finished our cup of wine afternoon in Londinium in 90 AD, and we're headed to the amphitheater. I hope for some laughter and no more proverbs. This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor.